The following podcast is part of the MindBodySpirit.fm podcast network.
Experience the difference. Unity Online Radio. The voice of an awakening world. Welcome to Spirit of Recovery, offering support for your spiritual growth and addiction recovery. Here's Reverend Dan Beckett.
Yes, welcome to the Spirit of Recovery on Unity Online Radio. We are glad you're with us today. I'm Reverend Dan Beckett, here with co-host Reverend Michelle Jelinch. Together, we share ways that spirituality and recovery intertwine and work together to support your spiritual growth in your recovery journey.
Facebook users, you can send us your questions and comments anytime during the week from our Facebook page, Spirit of Recovery. Just click the Send Message button right below the banner. Each week on the show, we'll respond to a listener question or comment. And please be assured that your anonymity will always be respected. So go ahead and let us know what's on your mind. We'd love to hear from you.
Our show today is titled, Our True Identity. When we first get clean and sober, we may be overwhelmed by a sense of lost identity. Who am I if I don't drink, use, or fix others? The recovery journey offers an opportunity to heal this dismay and grow into an entirely new sense of ourselves. Today, we want to share our experience, strength, and hope on finding out who we really are and how our new identity can bring deep meaning to our lives and our life's work.
So we'll begin today by sharing our experiences of that dismay, what that felt like, and then we'll move into the solution of realizing our true identity. After the break, we'll share exactly how realizing our true identity helped us to move from that dismay into a meaningful life. So Dan, tell us about what that dismay was like for you, what that was and what that felt like.
You know, what comes to mind first, and it comes to mind very quickly, is I had for years and years and years, I don't even know for how long I was aware of this. I think I was unaware of it for a very long time, but still aware of it for quite a while before I got on a recovery path, is that the world, plain and simple, the world moved too fast for me. It was too fast. I really felt like I needed an eighth day in the week just to recover from what had transpired in the previous days. You know, I learned over time that I didn't really have what at least one teacher described as internal support for dealing with just sort of the regular ups and downs and emotional aspects of life. But the way that it read to me was, and I was dismayed, that quite simply the world moved too fast for me. I felt like I didn't, something was wrong with me. I didn't belong. I didn't fit in. How is this even supposed to work? I can't abide this. You know, I can't handle it. I can't even.
I love that.
I can't even. World moves too fast.
Oh, or as our dear friend Maggie Alderman would say, I just can't.
Yes, that's right.
I can't.
That's a combination of can and ain't. You can, but you ain't.
Oh, goodness. Well, you know what I have to say, and this is funny because this happens so often. I was the opposite of that. I loved moving fast. I wanted to just run like the wind constantly. I don't know if I had that energy back that I had in my early 20s. Good Lord. I was you're just running on full blast all the time. You know, I had a lot of energy. I was extremely driven. But a lot of that was, you know, I was running, but I was running from myself as well. I was filling my life with a lot of ambition and achievement and things like that because I didn't want to feel the feelings I was having. And I didn't want to stop and be still long enough to have to think about things or feel things. So I was just a doer, just very busy, just accomplishing lots of things, never sitting still. I was being driven by full-blown perfectionism. I mean, really, like probably almost diagnosable. you know, just like I think I've shared before, had to clean my house, my tiny little apartment. How dirty could it get? Had to clean it from top to bottom every single Saturday without fail. Just obsessive, you know. That's the only thing I can think is that I was just, I wasn't, like we share so often in the program, I wasn't comfortable in my own skin. I didn't want to be still and be in my own skin. And being busy and doing things and running fast kept me from having to feel that.
That is a great reminder about how, even though from what I'm hearing from your sharing is that our inner experience might not be have been that different, but the way that it showed up, you know, just given our different personality types was quite different. And that's a great reminder that we don't all respond the same way to things. In fact, we don't even perceive things the same way.
Right.
So yeah, thank you for that. That's that whole, of course, introvert extrovert thing that must be going on. It's the, maybe it's people like you that were tiring me out. I'm not sure. I don't remember it being about any particular person. It wasn't a person or even a group of people. It was just the world, period.
Yeah.
Just the world in general. So kind of a expansion on that, another phrase that comes to mind that describes my dismay pretty well is that I felt what I would say under siege. I felt under siege all the time. Maybe that's just another way of saying there's too much going on, but too much going on is sort of neutral. Like I'm looking out my window on a busy city street and there's a whole lot going on out there. Under siege feels personal, right? Like it's I'm suffocating. It's detrimental to me. It's somehow, I don't want to say attacking because that's, I think that's too strong. I didn't really feel that way, but still it was somehow affecting me directly and not just in an, you know, an observational kind of way. And again, the too much going on, you know, feeling under siege in the world. Like I just needed to lock all the doors and block things off so that I could be okay. You know, that I could function okay in the world because it was just like too much input. And of course, again, and I always say this, completely unaware of that, totally unaware.
Oh, yes,
that's what was going on. But in hindsight, I see it pretty clearly.
Yeah, absolutely. No, these are awarenesses for the most part that we have or that I have looking back. I was also not aware of any of this at the time. It just was the way I was. And then I was thinking, well, yeah, that's why we drank, right? Like you drank
exactly
to get off of the roller coaster, you know. I drank because it was the only way that I would slow down long enough to be off of it for a while, you know. It's just
it worked great too.
It worked great.
For a while.
It did. Well, it got us through what we needed to get through. It served its purpose.
Works till it doesn't.
Yes, that's absolutely right. You know, I was thinking of that the whole idea of that losing our identity when we get clean and sober or when we cease from our active addiction. And I definitely had that fear of like, who will I be without alcohol? Like I couldn't even imagine. And it's strange to think that your identity is so caught up with a liquid that comes in a bottle, but it was, you know, it's like, what will I do? Where will I go? How will I act? You know, and then all those fears that a lot of us have in early recovery, if we get sober young, you know, oh gosh, I won't be able to drink at my wedding. And the things we worry about, you know, as if a wedding was anywhere on the horizon,
right.
That's what we're worried about. Right. The ways that our life isn't going to be the way we thought it was going to be without alcohol. And so I did definitely feel that fear of that loss of identity. Now, the good news, and we'll get more into that later, is that I found a whole new identity that was so much better. But there was that feeling of dismay, like, oh my gosh, it's like cutting off my hand or something, you know, what will I be without this thing?
Totally. And I resonate with what you're saying about, of course, alcohol as the solution for me, literally a solution, you know, not spiritual, but spirits that helped sort of create the feeling, at least, of a safe zone.
Yeah.
You know, it created a way to escape, a way to be comfortable that I could just reach out and draw on, you know, because as I mentioned, I didn't have for whatever reason, the internal supports for navigating the world, I reached out to external supports for it. And alcohol was, it was the perfect solution for so long. I mean, I got sober in my mid-40s, so much late, but I thought exactly the same thing, not the wedding. I was already on married my second time, and what I hope is my last time. Not so much the wedding, but the very same idea of like, oh my gosh, what am I going to do? I won't be able to drink when we go to the beach or this or that. Or that it, I mean, it creates a new kind of dismay. You know, maybe it's the it's the dismay that replaces the old dismay on the way toward healing. But yeah, I mean, I reached out for a substance, and you know, the other things as well. I was a nicotine addict most of my life, still am, but I don't use any nicotine products anymore. But it's only been a couple of years since that's been true.
Yeah.
I smoked most of my life, not entirely. I mean, there was an 8-year period of time when I quit, but ironically, I started smoking again when I got sober.
Which
started talking to people, and they're like, "No, that's not weird at all." In fact,
of course,
you had to put down one thing, so you're reaching for another thing. And honestly, it's way better because as I've mentioned and learned from a friend, I deal with my addictions in the order in which they'll kill me fastest. Alcohol was way at the top of the list. And honestly, smoking cigarettes, hey man, if it's going to keep me sober, no problem. It's way down the list from alcohol. Eventually it rose to the top, you know, when that's just a sign of, I guess, you know, working and walking a path and continued growth in sobriety and healing. And I'm grateful for it. Although sometimes I'm still mad that I don't smoke. And every once in a while, I'm getting a fight with my brain about whether that would be a good idea or not. But you know how that is. We all know how that is, regardless of what our substance or behavior of choice that has led us into recovery.
I love that, what you said. I deal with my addictions in the order in which they will kill me fastest. And I would say, and the order in which they are most profoundly affecting my life, too. You know, and the reason I say that is because I am a admitted caffeine addict, and you are not going to take that from me. And I've had it suggested. I had a therapist that suggested it to me, and I was like, you don't deal with recovery folks much, do you? Who tells an addict in early recovery to give up caffeine? I mean, that's
or you need to quit smoking.
No, very bad advice. Very, very bad. Yeah. Caffeine is not causing me to, you know, do all kinds of morally questionable things. So it's not profoundly impacting my life like other substances would. So it stays.
On the scale of problems, it's pretty dang small.
It's pretty low.
Compared to an alcohol addiction, or we could make a long list there. Heroin, opiates, cocaine, you know, there's all kinds of things that are just, you know, many, many more times worser. How's that for English?
Worser.
Yes, but now we know about this worser challenge of dismay. What might the solution be? Well, as always, in unity, we affirm that all of life is governed by spiritual principles.
Yes, and these spiritual principles, they inform us about the nature of God, the nature of humanity, that's us, and the relationship between the two.
And unity's second principle addresses the nature of humanity very cleanly, clearly. It states, our essence is of God, therefore we are inherently good. And this God essence was fully expressed in Jesus the Christ. It's this God essence that we carry is that what we want to focus on today. But what does that look like in our lives? And that seems like kind of a high concept, a God essence that we carry. We also call it Christ consciousness, among other things. But what does it mean in practical terms to say that our essence is of God? What does that look like?
Wow. So I love the second principle. It's it profoundly changed my life. Very hard to put it succinctly into words because it really was, it created a whole new reordering of my worldview, who I thought I was in the world, what I thought my worth was, what and who I thought God was, and how I fit into that. Just total reordering of my entire worldview. And thank God for that. That was the best change in my life. So, and it's so hard to characterize our relationship to God. You know, in Unity, we say that we are expressions of the divine. So we are sort of an emanation. The Fillmores love to use all these wonderful antiquated terms, you know, sort of an issuing forth from the source, you know, all these ways that they described it. But, and I know some folks don't like the use of this term, but I still like to go with the old school, I'm a child of God, because that, I know that it's bigger than that and it's more complex than that, but that works for my human brain and the state of mind that I'm in most days. And I just was telling you, I just preached on this on Sunday. It was Father's Day, and we were talking about that aspect of our relationship with God, which is like a child to a father. One aspect of our relationship. It's not the totality, but it's one part of it. And so what that meant was, as a child of, I mean, I don't know about for you, but this was a revelation to me that I was a child of God. And what that meant and how that began to change my feelings about myself. You know, in my active using, I had a lot of shame, just shame, you know, insidious, sort of subtle but deep shame. You know, I mean, I was a very out there person, very achievement oriented. I was popular, I was extroverted, but inside I had these feelings of not being good enough, of not being worthy, of not being lovable. And of course, I didn't know that at the time. That took years of therapy to figure out that that's what I was feeling, because it was layered over with my extroverted Enneagram 3 personality. You know, it was layered over with this sort of bravado and ultra confidence. And it's not that those things are false, but they were covering over this deep shame and feelings of unworthiness that I had. And so realizing my identity as a child of God was just the beginning of starting to unpack all of that icky crap, basically. And it's a process that I'm still fully engaged to up to the present time.
Absolutely. And I engaged affirm with. That with you.
Yes.
And one thing that was sort of a revelation for me along the same lines is that, you know, in Unity, we don't view humanity as inherently broken, right? Like irreparably at its very core.
Right.
We recognize that if you dig deeper than the dysfunction, and it is there, and I'll talk about that. But the core identity underneath it all is that we are of God, just like the second principle says. And therefore, because God is good, we are inherently good.
That's right.
Now, that statement can sound very strange to somebody who's not versed in what we're talking about, because if you look around at the world, it certainly doesn't look that way.
Right.
And if I take the time to look within myself, you know, that's a door I want to shut pretty fast, because it doesn't look that way in there either, right?
Yeah.
It's like, what do you say? My mind is a rough neighborhood, and you don't want to get... You don't want to hang around in there very often.
Go down any dark alleys.
No, right. But the truth is that underneath all of that, which we're so reluctant to look at or even acknowledge, let alone look at, underneath all of that is this spark of the divine that we would never realize if we weren't willing to look, to open that basement door, to go down there and start cleaning stuff out. And that is one of the gifts of recovery, is that my hand was forced. You know, I don't know anyone who would undertake that work willingly.
No.
Right. But you say, you know, well, you can do this or you can die in a box on a, you know, in an alley. It's like, okay, maybe I'll do this, but, you know, I'll do only as much as I absolutely have to.
Right.
So very, very reluctant, not wanting to let go of my old way of being, but realizing that I am not inherently broken. Now, I do have notable dysfunction You know, yes. I'm not saying that I'm outwardly perfect. I carry false ideas. You know, I have a limited view. I have things that I can work on. I have dysfunction, but that doesn't mean that at the very core of my identity that I am somehow bad or right. broken. It means I have work to do. And of course, the image that's so helpful for that is the image of the golden Buddha statue that's covered up with mud, right? You cannot see the gold. If someone told you there's gold under there, you still can't see it. You'd say, no, there's not. Don't lie to me. I see what's right in front of my face. It's painfully obvious. This right. is just a big wad of mud and you're nuts. Well, guess what? Underneath the mud is the golden Buddha statue, and the mud cannot, does not, and cannot change the gold. It right. can't. It's yeah. not possible. It's just obscuring it. And so our spiritual work can be seen as cleaning off the mud. Or I like sometimes to think of it that we each inside of us have a 1,000,000-watt light bulb, but that light bulb can be covered with a lot of junk. And so it's not feeling like it's shining quite to its 1,000,000-watt potential. But yes. if we're willing to undertake the painful work of cleaning it off, uh-huh. of doing our spiritual growth work, then it becomes more apparent outwardly that it's doing what it's always done inwardly, which is just right. shine and shine and shine.
Yeah, you know, that's something that really sets Unity apart from other denominations. A lot of us grew up in traditions where we heard repeated over and over that we were a sinner or we were sinners. And I totally get what is meant by that. I think it may have once had a much higher meaning than it has come to mean. For me, to say I'm a sinner means that I'm currently incarnated in an imperfect human body. But we don't talk like that in Unity. We don't talk about original sin. We talk about original blessing and original goodness. Yeah. So we come from the place of, you know, assuming that inherently we are good. Now, I love that you mentioned that that doesn't mean that we are just happy, happy, wonderful, wonderful all the time. You know, you know, you mentioned Robert Brummett, and I love him. And one of the terms I've heard him use is double vision. So mm-hmm. in Unity, we are required to hold a double vision at all times. So we see that there is at once a spiritual realm and a material realm. And that exists in the cosmos, and it exists within me. So I am at once fully spiritual and fully human. Sounds kind of like the Council of Nicaea, right? Yes. Jesus was at once fully human and fully divine, fully spiritual. So it means there is that aspect of me which is perfect and whole and complete and good, a perfect child of God. But I'm showing up in a human body with an ego, and I don't always show up materially as perfect and whole and good. So in that sense, you could say I'm a sinner, although we don't like to use that because it has such negative connotations, but it means that I'm imperfect. But it's such a paradox, like so many things in spirituality, because I know that my spiritual nature is perfect and whole and complete. It means that it's okay for me to show up as an imperfect human. And so that's what really began to shift in me in early recovery. I had so much shame about being imperfect, and I wanted to be perfect, that I tried to keep my surroundings perfect all the time to try to prove how perfect I was. When I began to learn that my spiritual nature was perfection, I began to accept that my human nature didn't have to be perfect. And I don't know if that makes sense to anyone else, but it was a profound realization to me that I did not have to be perfect, that it was okay to make mistakes. I don't know how, whose fault it was. It doesn't really matter. But somehow I did not learn that growing up, yeah. that it was okay to make mistakes. And so learning my inherent, you know, truth as a child of God meant that I could start to be okay with my human errors. It's okay. I can make a mistake. We all make mistakes. It may sound weird, but that was news to me. It was news yeah. to me. I don't know if my parents were perfectionists or somehow it comes from my personality or what, but it was not okay with me. I couldn't admit mistakes. If I made a mistake, I felt like completely flattened by it. So to start learning that it was okay for me to be an imperfect human and make mistakes because my truth, my true full nature is as a perfect child of God. That was a game changer for me completely.
You know, what other denominations call sin, and that is a word that we don't use a lot in Unity, although we do carry the concept and have an understanding of it. I've heard it described, or what was most helpful to me is sin, S-I-N, is a spiritually ignorant notion, right? It's any idea that I'm carrying that is not of God, that right. is not true in the deepest sense. And certainly I'm carrying a lot of ideas that are not the truth of God,
that's right.
So to speak. And so I'm carrying a lot of notions, right? Ideas in my head that are spiritually ignorant. S-I-N, yes. Spiritually ignorant notion. The difference is that it's not a moral failing, right? It's not a moral judgment. We don't
right.
see God as an ethical judge, mm-hmm. right? We see God as the same everywhere for everyone, all love, all the time. And that really is a revolutionary idea, at least in the West. You know, in the Eastern spirituality, it's a given that everyone has the spark of the divine deep within them. But in the Western world, that is not, found in at least Orthodox Christianity. It's certainly found in other places. But let's hold that thought because it's time for a short break. And when we come back, we'll continue the conversation. So we do hope that you please stay with us.
Discover the power within. Unity Online Radio. The voice of an awakening world.
Welcome back to Spirit of Recovery.
Welcome back indeed. We are glad you're with us today. And if you're just joining us, my name is Reverend Dan Beckett, and here with co-host Reverend Michelle Jellinge. We'll resume our discussion in a moment, but we first want to remind you that you can send us your questions and feedback anytime during the week from our Facebook page, Spirit of Recovery. Message us from there, and each week we'll respond during the show to a listener question or comment. And be assured that your anonymity will always be respected, so please let us know what's on your mind.
So prior to the break, we were discussing first that dismay that we felt maybe during active using or in early recovery. And then we talked about the second principle in unity and our true identity as divine beings. So now that we have discussed both the dismay of early recovery or using, and we know that the solution is to realize and know our true identity as divine beings, let's talk, Dan, about how we actually, how we did that, how we used our realization of that true identity to move into a much more meaningful life.
Well, what comes to mind first for me when I think about that, how does it help me move from that dismay that we're talking about to a life of meaning? The first thing that I realize is that it gives me a path forward even in the most difficult circumstances. So rather than feeling like I'm just sort of free floating in pain, or dismay, it gives me some sense of structure and some concept of, what does it mean to move forward? If I were going to put one foot in front of the other and make an effort to heal, what would that look like? Like, where am I walking? What is going on? So realizing my true identity as you said, a child of God gives me a path forward in even the most difficult circumstances. Now, I'm very aware of that, at least in part from some counterexamples. Like, I've been married a couple times. The second one seems to be sticking. It's been 26 years now. Oh, I don't want to make any assumptions, but this one's working out okay.
One day at a time.
And, you know, and the first one was short and troubling. But when I got divorced all those many years ago, I did not have any of this. In fact, if I think about it, I'm honest, that the time of that divorce is when I think I graduated to daily drinking at that point. I had just been sort of a heavy weekend drinker, but to manage the pain of that divorce, I really think that that's when I turned the corner and became a daily drinker, which I was for the next, I don't know, 20 plus years or something like that. But I didn't have anything like this. I didn't have a sense of the path forward. I didn't have a way to deal with that pain. I didn't know what to do. But I'm so grateful today that having this, what we're calling realizing our true identity, does give me a path forward. You know, and if I were, for whatever reason, just sort of hurled back into that exact same circumstance now, I'd be just fine.
Yeah. A path forward. I mean, that makes me think of hope, you know, of having hope. In order to move forward, we have to have hope. And realizing our true identity can be part of, you know, regaining that sense of hope. Hope that life could be different. Hope that life could be good. And I'm thinking about what a meaningful life is. You know, I know today my life has deep meaning, but I'm trying to sort of think, what exactly is it that gives it that meaning? And I think the meaning really began when, like what I mentioned in the last segment, when I began to understand and step into my inherent worth as a child of God. That began to give my life meaning. It meant that I was infinitely lovable. And that was something that, again, took me a lot of therapy to uncover this, but I learned that deep inside, I didn't feel lovable. I didn't feel like I was worthy of love. You know, and so my particular way of dealing with that was to swing the other way and try and prove to anyone and, you know, everyone exactly how lovable I was. And so that was not working out real well for me. I thought that I was super lovable, but I realized that I really didn't feel lovable. And so, you know, in unity, we say that God is love and that God is that force of love. And if we are expressions of God, then we too are expressions of love. And, you know, I think I might have mentioned this last week. Richard Rohr says that God loves things by becoming them.
Yeah.
God, I love that man. God loves things by becoming them. And so incarnating into human beings, as well as trees and, you know, dogs and bats and rivers and everything that we see around us, incarnating was an act of love. For God to become material was an act of love, because God loves things by becoming them. And so we are love, we come from love. And for me, that was the beginning of healing that deep belief that I was unlovable. And of course, for me, this has really been a healing journey. Life has become meaningful as I've healed more of those things that were really making me miserable, pretty much.
I love that too. I also love Richard Rohr.
Yeah.
And that's reminding me of another core tenet of unity. And I maybe my favorite way that I've heard it expressed was by, you know, my first unity minister. It was Chad O'Shea. I feel like I can still remember where I was sitting and see him standing up talking and saying, we don't deny, you know, the divinity of Jesus. We don't refute the divinity of Jesus, but we will refute the exclusive divinity
right.
of Jesus, because Jesus exhibited it so clearly that those around him really, I mean, the impression that I get from reading the Gospels is that the people around him fairly quickly realize there is something really, really important going on here. This
yeah.
guy is not like other people. I've never seen
yeah.
anything like it in my life. You have got to come hear him talk.
Mm-hmm.
It'll change your life.
Yeah.
And that's God showing up in Jesus, incarnating
yeah.
in Jesus, where in unity, We will claim that Jesus is not the only human being that God shows up in, but he certainly showed up very clearly in Jesus. He shows up in the rest of us, perhaps not quite so clearly. So maybe right. Jesus was the Buddha, the golden Buddha statue with no mud on it, if I could like totally mix traditions. Right. That's but right. my golden Buddha statue has mud on it. So, you know, I like the idea that might a little patch of it shine through here or there. But it's, you know, it becomes a lifetime practice. But Jesus then is the great example, not the great exception. Yes. And Jesus is to be followed, which means not just walk, not just trot behind and listen to, but live like. Do as the teacher does.
Yep.
You know, it's so much deeper than just any kind of admiration or even devotion. You know, when Jesus says, if you pray any of this in my name, you will have it. In my name doesn't mean to say the words that include my name. It means if you could do it, if you could become take on the very nature, if you could see how I see, which is how God sees.
That's right.
All you would instantly know this, you know, there is nothing that you cannot do. So to do something in Jesus' name means to do it from Jesus' point of view. Mm-hmm. And that is extraordinarily hard to do.
Yes. Well, I love that you brought up Jesus. And it's true, you know, in unity, one of the ways I've heard it described is that we differ from Jesus, not in kind, but in degree.
Yes.
So I think that can be confusing because when we say, oh, you know, we're fully divine, just like Jesus was, it can tend to, I mean, it doesn't raise us up. What it does is brings Jesus down, kind of waters Jesus down a little bit, right?
For some people,
Yeah, I mean, we're not saying that we are showing up anything like Jesus. I'm certainly not claiming that about myself. I have the potential to, but will I get anywhere even near that in this lifetime? Probably not. But it means that the potential is there. And I like your metaphor about the Buddha, you know, with the mud, that it's under there. But, you know, I'm probably not going to get all the mud off in this lifetime. And Jesus, for whatever reason, was walking mud free from the get-go, you know? And so he is that perfect example. And of course, you know, and again, Richard Rohr, he says over and over, Jesus invited us to follow him. And instead we set up an altar and we worshiped him, but we didn't follow him. We didn't step into what he was asking of us. And, you know, of course he said, you will do all these things and even greater things. So it's very clear that his intention was for us to follow him. A lot easier to just worship him and hold him up on a pedestal and think that we can never come anywhere near.
Exactly. It's an out.
That's right. It's an excuse. Yes. And so again, as I mentioned, I was healing from many things. I continue to be healing from many things that I was not lovable. Another thing I was healing from was that I was not good enough. And so again, this realizing my true identity as a divine expression of God helped me to heal from that not feeling good enough, because it gave me an inherent sense of worth that could not be earned. So to understand this, again, I'm a 3 on the Enneagram. I feel like I have to earn things by performing and being wonderful and being accomplished and competent. And that's how I've always gotten my sense of self-worth. But this new realization, this second principle of unity, is telling me that I am inherently worthy regardless of anything I do. It has nothing to do with what I do or how I show up or what I accomplish or what degrees I have or anything. It just is. Now, that's a pretty hard concept for this one to understand. So it's something that I continue to try to wrap my mind around, because I continue to want to place my worthiness in material things, you know, my profession, my, you know, whatever, just, you know, very material things. And this is asking me to believe in my worth as being absolutely inherent as an expression of the divine, and nothing can be done to earn it. and nothing can be done to lose it. And so that's something that I still work with today. But it was the beginning of deep healing for me.
And all this really is, and even in our question that we asked, which is, you know, how has realizing my true identity helped me move from dismay to a meaningful life? And as you share, I'm reminded that it very much brings deep meaning to our experience. To realize these things that we're talking about. And one out picturing of that, if you will, or sort of the next step, is that it helps me to look for and see all these things in other people, right? Mm-hmm. I'm not the only one. We talk about it always in very personal terms. You know, we use I a lot in Unity when we're talking about the divine and all these kinds of concepts that we're talking about, because of course each of us experiences it within our own individual self, right? But it is equally true for absolutely everyone, right? No one's any better or worse than anyone with regard to these things. And so knowing that helps me to look for this and see this in others. You know, we talked a little bit about the three faces of God way of seeing, well, and how it maps to the Trinity, the Father, Son, the Holy Spirit. So the Holy Spirit is how I experience God within myself, and the Son is how I experience God in other people. So if I see God, quote, shining out from somebody, you know, Richard Rohr or the Dalai Lama or whoever it might be, the Pope or whatever, you know, that I am seeing God from a particular perspective, you know, second person perspective, and that maps to God the Son. And so this core concept of our inherent goodness and realizing my true identity helps me realize that it's your true identity also. No more and no less than my own. Truly a flat playing field. And if I'm wonderful, you're wonderful. You know, and I don't need to compete with you or with anyone. We all have that, you know. I was reminded of the word grace as you spoke, that sort of unearned favor. It's unearnable. Even I always feel like I want to go a little further. It's not, I mean, it is a gift in that there it is, but there's nothing that I do to make it happen, and there's nothing I can do to make it go away. It just is. It's unearnable and undismissible, and it's the same for you and me both, and for everyone.
Yes, thank you for that reminder. This selfish recovering alcoholic over here forgets that there are even other human beings on the planet, frankly.
Me too. It is all about me that I forget to say that.
It is all about me. But we learn that in the rooms too, right? We have a term that gets used a lot, that we learn to be right-sized. And what I love about right-sized is it means not just that I'm not bigger than you, it also means that I'm not smaller than you. So I'm not any better than you, and I'm not any worse than you. I'm right-sized. And that is, again, a concept that I have to continue to work with all the time, because, you know, my nature is to compare myself right away. When I meet someone, I'm sussing them out. Is this person smarter than me or less smart than me? Are they, you know, accomplished as me or less accomplished than me? I mean, you know, and just it's human nature, but it's something to be aware of and to, you know, try to keep in check that. And that's what this principle tells us, that we all have the same inherent value and worth. You know, one of the most powerful things I ever did was begin to try to live from the saying that we have in Unity, I behold the Christ in you. To begin to look at people and say that in my mind, say that within myself, and to truly begin to get it on a more visceral level, not just a heady intellectual or platitude level, but to be able to look at a human being and say, I behold the Christ in you. You are just as much an expression of the divine as I am. It'll change your life if you really try to do that, you know, and it's challenging, but it definitely shifted my understanding of this second principle. Now, in my own personal theology, this extends to all beings, not just human beings. In fact, even what we would call non-sentient beings. I believe that everything around us is an expression of the divine. So trees and rivers and everything that I see. And, you know, go out and take a walk in nature, and even for just a couple minutes, try and really get that every single thing you see is an expression of the divine. It's a profound exercise that when I began to try to see the world in that way, it really changed things for me. And it's a challenge. It's Robert Brummett's double vision. It's hard to walk around like that all the time. You know, I think if you do walk around like that all the time, like Jesus did, maybe you ascend or something, because it's just difficult to be a human being and be that fully anchored into both realms. You know, we kind of have to dwell a little more in the human realm in order to be able to feed ourselves and take care of our homes and our children, you know, but we can do it for periods of time and get that real knowing. And then that bleeds over into our daily life.
Yeah, I love that way of seeing it. You know, and I'm sitting here thinking, in a sense, at least from where I sit, you'd have to be a little unhinged, really, to do that fully. From where I sit, that's how it might look.
Right.
You know, like a little, like, I don't know, that guy's a little wacky. I mean, that if you're really living that point of view, what a different world I would be experiencing. And so, yes, I might feel like I'm floating a little free here. I'm a little unhinged, but I think that's part of it. That's just what it looks like from where I sit, you know, covered with some mud and all that. So another aspect of realizing my true identity helps me move into a meaningful life is that it gives me what I think of as a place to return to, some kind of home base, some solid ground that my life is predicated or built upon. And I'm not just free floating out in the world, you know, any way the wind blows, so to speak.
Right.
And the phrase that I've heard that helps me with that is that I return to that which called. Mm-hmm. And in a sense, I believe that we're all called. We're all called by God to show up in this world the way that we do. And, you know, what we do with that call is up to us individually, but I believe that it's there. It's that still small voice that we read about in the prophet Elijah. It's that God calling that we can hear if we're willing to turn within, or what Reverend Eric Butterworth was talking about in his book, The Universe is Calling.
Yeah.
And through prayer is how we hear it. And then, of course, we get to decide. I can ignore it if I want. I can take it up. I can really strongly identify with it. But I love that that realizing my true identity gives me a way to return always to that which called. And it is 100% reliable, you know, unlike anything else. The weather's not reliable. If what I mean is I need it to be a certain way, hey, maybe that way, and it may not. Although in California, maybe more often than not, it's the way that you want it to be. But you know what I'm saying? And I love that about this way of living and realizing my identity in this way.
You know, you were saying that it's so difficult to try to see from where we sit what it would be like to live that way. But I believe that that's what Jesus was showing us, what Jesus
was calling us to do.
Jesus was saying, this is what it, I mean, and, you know, so obvious, like with a billboard, this is what it looks like to live this way. Love your neighbor as yourself, you know, forgive easily, turn the other cheek, be kind. I mean, Jesus was saying, this is what it looks like, people.
Wake up.
Like you always say, the Sermon on the Mount, just look at the Sermon on the Mount. Just look at the Beatitudes. Jesus is saying, this is the way. This is the way. And it's almost too simple for us to see it. Simple, but not easy. Not easy. But I believe that prescription is contained in the Gospels, that this is how you live this out in a real way. We just have to step into it and do it.
Easier said than done, but I love, like you're sharing, I love seeing it there and doing it to the best of my ability. But let's change gears now and turn our attention to a question or a comment from you, our listeners. Here's a question that often comes up. I don't believe in God. I don't know. I've heard this in recovery rooms. I don't believe in God. How can I be part of 12-step recovery? Michelle, what do you think?
Oh, my goodness. This could be a whole talk in itself. You know, the good thing is that you don't have to believe in God as you may be thinking of it, and you don't even have to use the word God. Nobody's going to require anything of you, either in Unity or in 12-step. You know, it's up to us to grapple with and evolve that understanding of God that fits us. And I guarantee it will change over time. It's not a static thing. So, you know, what we always say, look within. Look within. The answers are within. And looking within can mean being in nature. For me, it very often means being in nature. It doesn't mean sitting in lotus position, you know, going om. That's not... you know, the only way to do it. It's not even usually my way to do it. But we can look within and we can begin to find that concept of, and call it something different. If God doesn't work for you, call it HP, call it higher power, call it great spirit, call it divine mind, source. God doesn't care what you call God. You know, all of those words are just barely pointing at what the true nature of God really is anyway.
Absolutely. And, you know, I'm reminded of the drinking phrase, BYOB, right? Like you'd see that on party invitations. Well, of course, I did it anyway, whether someone said to or not. I didn't want to run out. But BYOG, right? We can bring your own God.
Yeah.
No one is asking, as you said, no one is asking like, it may seem like some people are, and actually there may be people that are, but you can ignore them. You can come up with your own concept that works for you. And like you said, Michelle, you can use HP, turn within and do some discovery, take a walk in the woods. You can just literally make something up and see how it feels. I mean, it sounds silly, but I'm telling you from personal experience, it works. You can borrow someone else's concept. You can try it on for size. You can do what we call act as if and see what happens.
Yes. Well, as always, we like to offer you an affirmation that you can use to solidify and take deeper some of the concepts we've talked about today. And so today, our affirmation is about really stepping into and owning that inherent nature that we have of divine beings. So I know my truth as a unique expression of divine love.
That's a wonderful statement of this identity that we've been talking about. I know my truth as a unique expression of divine love, or as God's love. I like that too. I could say I know my truth is a unique expression of divine love. Grateful for that. Well, guess what? It has happened again. You've given yourself the gift of another hour listening to Spirit of Recovery, and we are certainly grateful. We hope you found something in all of our yammering that will be genuinely helpful to you in your recovery. That's our fondest wish. Yeah. And thank you, Reverend Michelle, for our discussion, and thank you to all who are listening to the podcast via Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, and TuneIn. We bless you wherever you are on your recovery journey.
And listeners, if you'd like, you can always connect with us on our Facebook page, Spirit of Recovery, and give us your thoughts and feedback. We invite you to join us again next Tuesday at 4 p.m. Central. And until then, don't drink like my co-host.
And don't drink like my co-host.
Instead, go and have yourself a wonder-filled week.
Thank you for listening. This is Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
If you're inspired by the teachings of Dr. Wayne Dyer, you will love the Change Your Thoughts, Change Your Life podcast with Nadia De La Cruz.
You are a spiritual being having a human experience. My name is Nadia De La Cruz, and I started the Change Your Thoughts, Change Your Life podcast to explore spiritual topics like manifestation and meditation with guests who share their own stories of insight, awakening, and transformation. Listen now on the mindbodyspirit.fm podcast network or wherever you get your podcasts.